This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Museum of Contemporary Art Detroit, MOCAD, is kicking off a series of exhibitions this week focusing on disrupting negative narratives about Detroit and putting some light on the intense creativity, the people, and the work that uplifts the city. As we spend this Black History Month on Stateside talking about Black futures and Black joy, we definitely wanted to hear more. The very first exhibition in this series at MOCAD is a public archive of books about Black art, creativity, and their intersections with the life of the city. And it's coming to us from Ozma Walton, an independent curator and educator living and working in Detroit. And she is the founder of the Black Art Library. The library goes on view this weekend through April 18th. And Ozma Walton is with us today. Ozma, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here.
It's great to hear your voice. When did you start collecting books about Black art? Does this precede your formal education?
Kind of. So a few years back, this was when I was still in undergrad, and when my birthday would come around and I couldn't really think of what I would want, I would just put books on my like Amazon wish list and tell my friends like, hey, here's this link to my wish list, and they would usually have art books on there. So honestly, like a couple of the art books that I started to have my own kind of personal collection came as gifts from friends. And I think that's kind of where my interest in having art books kind of started, because they're just really cool. A lot of them are really cool coffee table books, and they have a lot of really good information, a lot of great pictures. They're really fantastic.
A mix of the academic and the enjoyable.
Yes, exactly.
How many books are in your collection?
So my count, I tried to have my count as accurate as possible since the exhibition is about to open, and it's around 390-ish. So almost 400 books, which is really exciting. And that's not including things in the collection that aren't books, because I have some of those type of things as well.
I know this is a terrible thing to do, asking you to choose among your darlings, but are there books in the collection, maybe ones that are part of the exhibition, maybe not, but ones that were especially inspiring or real touchstones for you in your thinking about art and Black life?
Well, one book that's in the collection that's super special to me is really the first book that I bought for the library. A few of the books when I started the collection last year, you know, I just pulled them from my personal collection of books that I owned. But this one was the first one I actually bought. I found it on, I think it's Abe Books, and it was $50. And it is a exhibition catalog from the Studio Museum in Harlem for artist Buford Delaney. And it is from 1970. It could be from the 60s, but it might be the 70s. And that's the first book that I bought for the collection. And it's in amazing condition. Color photos, the photos of the paintings are beautiful. I was excited about it because after I found that one, I couldn't find any more on the internet. And that was kind of exciting to me. I was like, I got the last one on the internet, which is probably not true, but it was kind of exciting for me to start the collection off with a book like that that's super special about an artist that, you know, I think that he doesn't get enough shine, but that is kind of changing more recently because there was a recent exhibition that was combined with his work, also with his friendship with James Baldwin.
Yeah.
That took place in Tennessee. I think I didn't get to see it, but it was nice to see that Buford Delaney was getting some highlights.
Wow, that's a nice get for you. For those who've never seen his work, Buford Delaney was very active during the Harlem Renaissance. Like you say, he was a contemporary of Baldwin. And his work is just intensely colorful, and it's very vibrant. Was this book more about, you know, the experience that it brought you of his work, or more about sort of who he was and what he represented in his times?
I think for me, it was kind of more about actually being able to see his work. Buford Delaney was an artist that I learned about on my own, not while in undergrad, not in any of my art history courses. I don't even think I've ever seen a work of his in person at any of the institutions that I've worked in. So his work was pretty unknown to me. So having the opportunity to actually see these color photos of these beautiful portraits he's painted just gave me some insight into who he was as an artist. And from there, sparked kind of an interest to know more about his life and, you know, started to learn a little bit about his friendship with James Baldwin. And it just kind of opened the door, I think, for me to learn a little bit more about this artist that was kind of new to me.
Asma, you started by studying art education at Michigan State and went on to do a master's in arts policy at NYU. For those who, you know, may not be familiar with what that kind of track has to offer, could you sort of explain the grounding that arts politics gave you?
Yeah, so while I was at Michigan State, I was studying art education, but I was pretty sure that I didn't want to be teaching in a traditional classroom sense, especially because I knew for me that I would want to teach visual arts in Detroit Public Schools. Detroit Public Schools doesn't have visual arts classes. There are a lot of schools that have really great performing arts programs, which of some that I've experienced while through my schooling in Detroit. But there are no painting classes or ceramics or kind of anything of that nature. So I knew once I got certified, I wouldn't be able to teach in the city. And that's what I really wanted to do. I wanted to be able to be involved in the community. So I decided to kind of think of other paths that I could kind of take. And it was kind of difficult because I didn't really have a blueprint or didn't really know where to look and what other like kind of jobs that you can have as an arts educator if you're not an art teacher. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I became interested in museums a little. And I came across this master's program while I was just doing Google searches. I still don't remember how exactly I found this program because people ask me that all the time and I don't really know. But this program kind of showed the people involved. So it was a pretty small cohort. And we got to see how society is affected by art and how art can actually influence a lot of social change in the community. And it was really kind of grounded in whatever your background was. So I was kind of approaching these topics from a position in arts education. There were people in my program that were independent curators. There were people that had an interest in music. There were people that had studied law. So a lot of us were coming from really different places, and that was kind of the beauty of this program. You kind of entered it where you saw fit, and there was a lot of room to kind of, you know, make your own experience, kind of build what you wanted your classes to be. And all of the information was really kind of like an umbrella and really overarching that could fall into a lot of different categories depending on what your interests were.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Asma Walton. She is the founder of the Black Art Library and an independent curator and educator living in Detroit. She is the curator of the exhibition Going On View at MOCAD this weekend, the Black Art Library, which is this collection of art through the ages by Black artists and also Black criticism of art. So the art world has been involved in a pretty intensive reconsideration of Black art. This has happened in the form of what contemporary artists are producing, how they're interacting with institutions, which, you know, has sometimes been kind of combustible and has been trying to push the establishment pretty hard. At the same time, there are works of poetry like Robin Costi Lewis's Voyage of the Sable Venus, reconsidering how Black people have been treated by the art world for many years, and any number of scholarly works just sort of asking us to think about the objectification that's happened to Black people and the damage that has been done by white artists and the white art world. As you think about what you want young people, and especially Black young people, to know about art and what education can do, what do you want to show them?
I really just want to show them that it's out there and that it exists. And I kind of want to open their eyes to the different kind of pathways that being interested in art can take you as far as even your career. There are a lot of careers in the arts that you don't really learn about. You don't learn about being an art curator in school. I didn't know what that was probably until I got to college. I didn't know what a curator was. I feel like now that word and that position is a little more known, but I've always been really excited to just kind of show the possibilities that are out there. I've done work at a few different institutions, museums that I've worked with. I've worked with their teen programs. And one of the things that I've gotten the opportunity to do with both groups is I bring in different people from different positions in the museum and just a career day type thing, which is always super exciting for me because I created like a little test that was kind of just a bunch of blind questions with answers, trying to gauge what kind of job they might like having if they worked in a museum. And so they didn't know what answer they were getting. And I told them, you know, what jobs that they were best fit for. If that was, that could also be facilities, that could be education, that could be IT in museums, that could be being a curator. But there are so many roles that exist in the arts that are just not exposed to young people. And even adults don't really know what goes on when you work in arts institutions. So I really just want to spark an interest. So maybe they see the exhibition and they decide like, oh, this artist seems cool. I might look them up when I go home. That's enough for me, for them to get out of it. Of course, it would be cool. Like, oh, like now I want to be a painter, but that's really not my goal at all because, you know, I'm not a painter. I don't consider myself a practicing artist, but I still found my love and kind of my career still falls within the arts without having to be an artist. So I think that just kind of shows that there are different ways that you can take and different ways that you can really enjoy and work in the arts.
A lot of people maybe haven't had the experience of going to an exhibition of art books, which is what you've curated for MOCAD. Can you talk a little bit about just the physical experience that people can expect when they go and how you wanted to set it up?
Actually, I guess it was the end of September. I did a pop-up at a house owned by an artist named Tony Rave, and it is called the 48-Hour Complex, and eventually it's going to basically be a hub for Black artists, a space that they can exist in. He offered up the space to me to use for a pop-up for the library. So I got some tables, some bookshelves, and kind of set up like a makeshift kind of library inside this house. There was a really big backyard so people could, you know, pick out some books, go sit in the backyard on their blanket or something of that nature just to relax, to sit down and read the book. And I kind of wanted to keep that experience kind of similar at MOCAD because it seemed to work and people kind of enjoyed it. And it just seemed like a really, you know, relaxing environment. And it was really cool to see. So in MOCAD, the way that it's set up is there are several shelves around the room with all of the books on them. They are not really separated in any particular way except for the children's books, because I want to encourage people to kind of like, you have to dive in and really get in there and look in there to see if there's a specific book that you're looking for. You might come across something else that you want to read before you even get to it. People will be able to go up, grab a book off the shelf. There are a few tables set up with about 2 chairs at each just to be mindful of social distancing. And you can pull a few books off the shelf, have a seat at the table, and look through the books. When you're done with the books, you can leave them on the table or set them on the side on the library carts that we have. It's kind of similar to if you were at a library. If you're not checking out the books, you can just leave them kind of wherever. At the end of the night, the books will get put back. And it's really kind of set up as a comfortable reading room, a space that people can, you can come in there and kind of study, honestly, if that's what you wanted to do.
I'll have an eye out for that Buford Delaney book, but do you have any other recommendations of stuff in the collection that we shouldn't miss?
Yes. Well, one book, this is more of a recent book, but it is Black Futures by Kimberly Drew and Jenna Wortham. But that's one is a fairly new book. Yeah, it's a new one, but we do have it, and it's fantastic. It's a very beautiful book. The way that it's put together is amazing. So definitely I want people to find that one. Some other books, I don't know, there's so many really great ones, like old ones and new ones. The children's books are kind of my favorite. There are a lot of gems in the children's books, so you might want to spend some time at that shelf. A lot of the children's books by Faith Ringgold are amazing. You know, she writes them and illustrates them. One of the ones I actually did a reading for it at the pop-up, and that was my first time reading it during that time, but it was a great book. A lot of history. It was a really, really great book for not just children, but for anyone. So definitely check out the children's books as well.
You know, you've talked about your commitment to building futures for the students that you want to work with and the possibilities that you'd like to show them. Mainstream narratives about Black life and maybe to some extent about Black art have often focused on hard things. I ask this question not wanting to glance over the fact that Black art has been a very important platform for discussing a lot of things that have gone on and are going on in society right now. But is there a way, as you're building the collection, that you're trying to ensure that you don't lose sight of the things that are joyful and the things that are just explosively creative in the work that's out there?
Yeah, so for me, one thing that I really like to focus on really is the imagery of whatever works that I might be looking at, whatever paintings, whatever sculptures, and I kind of just like to take them for what they are as I see them. Of course, many things have a lot of layered meanings and deeper meanings, but every time you engage with one of those works, you're not obligated to dive into some type of theory work or, you know, think of some kind of like essay in your head about how you feel about it. You're not obligated to do that. You actually can just take something for what it is right in front of you and enjoy it for having some red color in it or having some blue or just for the curve or the shape of it that you really do enjoy. A lot of these artists that are included in the Black Art Library, they do cover some very, very heavy topics, but there are other artists that are included that do landscape work that show some beautiful cows next to some grass next to a lake or a river. And I think it's important to focus on those artists too that really are focused on the technique and the strategy of being a painter, being a fine artist.
What made it possible for you to grow the collection to the stage that it's in right now?
I guess I would just say that this is a very community-driven project. I'm building it for the community, but also all of the work that I've done building this has not been, you know, on my own. I've received amazing book donations. I've received boxes in the mail that come with like 10 or 15 books, a lot of them being like rare books that even if I like look them up, they're a couple hundred dollars to buy online. And those are people that are willing to have these books be a part of this collection because they realize that, you know, it might be better for the Black Art Library to have this book instead of it sitting on my shelf for all these years and no one else being able to engage with it. Those things are super important, but also I have received a lot of monetary donations from people that have supported me continuing to collect these books because when I started, I was, you know, doing this out of my pocket, but art books are super, super expensive. So that wasn't really feasible past the few months that I was doing it. And also people that have connected me to other people that have wanted to make donations, that have offered to, you know, connect me with someone that might want to interview me, even people that just send me messages and ask, could we Zoom? And so they can learn a little bit more about the project. This has been a lot of work with me interacting with a lot of different people, a lot of different communities that have been helping to support this project. So I think that's always super important to remember.
Asma Walton is the founder of the Black Art Library. The library is going on view at MOCAD this weekend, and it'll be there through April 18th. If you reach out to MOCAD and you have concerns about crowding or how you're going to go see it, I'm sure the staff would be able to steer you toward a time when there might be fewer people there. Asma Walton, thank you so much for talking to us about this, and thanks for the collection.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Arts and culture coverage on Stateside is supported in part by an award from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.